Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Ron Giordano. My guest today is Rick Lofgren. He is the president and CEO of CODA. CODA is the Children's Organ Transplant Association. Rick joined us about 6 or 7 months ago, and he's going to give us an update again on how things are going for CODA and what's new and what's taking place. Rick, thank you for joining us on the show.
Ron, it's a pleasure to be here and to visit with your listeners as well for Around Town.
So why don't we tell the people about your nonprofit and how things are going for your organization?
Sure. Thank you. Well, as a quick update, the Children's Organ Transplant Association was founded in Bloomington, Indiana in 1986. We're a national nonprofit that works with kids around the country who need a life-saving transplant. And we do a lot of work in Northern Illinois, where most of our patients go to Lurie Children's Hospital, but some still go to Madison, to the University of Wisconsin, or to Wisconsin Children's in Milwaukee. But we work with kids that need a life-saving transplant. Most kids in the United States today have insurance coverage, and what we try to do is come alongside those families to help them with those things that insurance doesn't cover. So for instance, household expenses, their transportation and lodging, and then we can pay those medical bills for things like prescriptions, co-payments, and deductibles. And for those of your listeners that have been hospitalized, they know that there are many things that come along with any kind of hospitalization that just doesn't get covered by insurance. We come alongside those families to make sure that we can make them whole again so that when they get their child home from the transplant, they have the opportunity to continue their education, go to high school, get their driver's license, go on vacations, those kind of things that you and I take for granted.
Well, we might want to mention too, Rick, that the reason the donations go to CODA, because if you make it personally to that family, there's a tax consequence.
Absolutely. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, much like a school district is, or the charities that your listeners support, Ron. And money that comes to us comes to CODA so that it is tax deductible for the contributor, but it also is not taxable income for the families that we're able to help. And so you're able to make a donation to CODA and say, I'd like to help a child in Huntley, Illinois, or a child in Chicago, Illinois, or someone in San Francisco, California. And we are the conduit for families to do that. And that's how we really benefit our families tremendously.
Rick, how many patients have you assisted so far?
Well, in our 38-year history, we've helped about 4,300 families. And last year, calendar year 2023, we had 1,011 patients that we helped with and paid out more than $4 million to help with their transplant-related expenses. So those co-payments and deductibles, those drives back and forth from home to the transplant center, all those are eligible expenses that we can help with. And again, there's no tax consequence for our families. And so we help them and it doesn't impact their benefits they get either from Medicare or Medicaid.
You know, we have a broad range of listeners and I'm sure they're wondering, you talk about the younger children getting transplants. What about those that fall into the senior category, Rick?
A great question. We can help patients run up through the age of 21, regardless of their diagnosis. And we can help patients that are older than that have a single gene disease. So probably the ones that your listeners are familiar with are polycystic kidney disease, or better known as PKD. Cystic fibrosis is another major one. Alpha 1 is another one. But it's a disease that is something that they're born with, and perhaps it doesn't manifest to the point where they need transplant or even regular care until they're older. So if you go to our website, Ron, you probably will see some gentlemen that are my age in their late 50s or perhaps have a beard. You would say, that doesn't look like a child to me, but we can help patients regardless of their age. And we have some families, and I talked to one of these moms recently that her son was transplanted 31 years ago this past week in Phoenix, Arizona. Her son now is 33, is a dad himself, but he's still accessing the funds that were raised for him way back when he was a two-year-old.
So people within contact your association if they're in need. Is that how it works, Rick?
It is. And honestly, Ron, what we're finding today is that more people are learning about us online. A lot of your listeners probably are on Facebook and are part of Facebook user groups. There are a lot of user groups. Two of them I'm very familiar with are ones called Liver Mamas. And they do still have fathers that are part of that group, but the founders were moms. There's a Kidney Parents group. And most of our families now cite their first contact with us was because some other parent in one of those online support groups has said, "Our family's been through this. You want to try check out this family and try to see how they can help you as well." But today, still the most important person in this conversation is a social worker at a local hospital. So the person that they might go into Lurie Children's Hospital would tell them, "Your family's facing a transplant. It's not the million-dollar procedure because insurance will come in and help you, but it's still going to cost your family tens of thousands of dollars in the first year. And over your child's lifetime, it's not uncommon for our families to have $50,000, $60,000, even $75,000 of expenses just to keep everyone above ground."
So financially, in dollars and cents, how many dollars have you folks raised so far, Rick?
Well, in our 38-year history, we've raised approximately $160 million, and that money has gone to help patients whether they needed a transplant right now or they've had a transplant in the past. We have patients like the young man that I mentioned that lives in the Phoenix area. He's still accessing that to pay for his co-payments and deductibles on his medications. And in his case, he pays multiple hundreds of dollars per month for his immunosuppressant drugs, which keeps his organs healthy.
We should probably share with the folks too that whenever people think about charities, they say, okay, how much of my dollar, if I make a donation, is really going to the charity and how much is going to administration? How's that breakdown for you folks, Rick?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, Ron, we're one of those odd charities where every dollar that's contributed for our kids is actually going to help that child. Whenever we raise money, what CODA does is we retain the interest income that's generated, but 100% of the principal goes to help our kids. And even in those cases where families have expenses that go above and beyond what their volunteer team has raised through CODA, we have grants that we receive from organizations that help come alongside those families. And sometimes we actually pay out, for $100 expense, we might end up paying 120 because we're able to help them further than what the volunteer team was able to do.
We're going to pause for a minute to remind everybody you're listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. We're talking with Rick Lofgren, from the president and CEO of CODA. Rick, the families that are eligible for challenge grants, can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Every one of our families, Ron, is eligible. And the challenge grants work in a way that every $25,000 that a volunteer team raises through CODA, we kick in a $2,500 challenge grant. And that's up to a maximum of $10,000. We do have additional grants that are available. Like I mentioned, sometimes we come alongside families where their expenses just exceed what the volunteer team was able to raise. But we also have some diagnoses. If a patient needs an islet cell, for instance, if they have pancreatitis and might need a kidney transplant, each of those families receive a grant because the foundation said this is an area that we're very interested in, and we feel like getting money through CODA to help those families is the better way for us to do that rather than each family coming to them one-off and having to go through that process. We also have state funds run in the state of Illinois. The American Legion has been a strong supporter of ours. And so each of our Illinois-based families receive a grant from that fund, and we have similar funds from foundations and businesses literally in every state across the country.
Rick, do you run across those families that maybe don't have the access to funds, having a difficult time, and how that would work for them?
We do, and unfortunately, sometimes those challenges are because family lives in a literally a tiny community, and they might be one of three families there. With the elections that just occurred recently in New Hampshire, I think of that town that has six people that voted in the
Yes.
primary, and that's one of those that we would be able to help. And perhaps using an online platform that we offer at no cost to our families is the better way to go. So we'll show families how to use the internet, how to use social media. We'll be able to help them with fundraising, even if they don't have a large community base. And honestly, Ron, one of the things that we face is a lot of our families are in the military. And so those families have moved from base to base. And over the years, while they have lots of friends, they don't necessarily have a lot of friends where they're currently stationed. That's where the internet can help, and we are able to leverage those tools that we have to make that family successful.
Now, I know you talk about fundraising. Do families necessarily have to do fundraising, or can they just donate money themselves to help out, as opposed to trying to go through all the fundraising process?
I'm sure many of your listeners support charities like CODA, and that's a great point. What we really want people to know is that if you'd like to help families and just don't know who that might be or what community, you can reach out to us and we can connect you with our families. If someone wanted to make an unrestricted gift that would go to help whoever needs the most, we can do that as well. And your listeners can go to our website, which is cota.org or coda.org, and they can hunt around and look at families that we're helping, and you can pinpoint someone literally down to a zip code, or you can say, I'd like to help someone that needs a kidney transplant, or I don't know who needs help, and I don't really care what type of transplant, I just want to help. You can do that too.
So if a family member comes to you and says, okay, my dad needs a kidney transplant, he is then listed on your website and donations come in, or the family donations will come in, will be listed under that person's name on your website.
It is. And what we do, Ron, is that when someone does make a gift, there's an opportunity online to write a note to that family member. So if you want to tell them, we'll be praying for you, or Uncle Joe wants you to get back on your feet again, you can add those kind of notes. And it really is a nice way for those families, especially those that are in the hospital and away from their support networks. It's a nice way for people to reach out and say, we're pulling on the reins just as hard with you as we can. Might not be possible to get to the hospital because it may be hundreds of miles away, but sending that message online is a great way to cheer people up and let them know that you're thinking of them.
You know, when I looked at your website, under each person, there seems to be like a goal, a number, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000. And
Yes.
is that set by the families?
That's actually something that I established with each of our families when we first talked to them. As a case in point, I had a conversation with a family from Southern Georgia last night, and their son needs a kidney transplant. They have great insurance coverage, and their biggest cost is going to be where they live is about 200 miles from the hospital. So every time they go to a clinic visit, it's a 400-mile round trip. They're staying in Atlanta, so they have to stay in a hotel. They have food, obviously the gas money back and forth, and then they have co-payments and deductibles that they have to cover. So those are part of the factors that we take a look at when we set the goal. But in that family's case, they set the goal at $40,000. Again, great coverage, but those costs that I just described, they're going to have those every single time they go to a clinic visit. When the hospital calls them and says, we have an organ for your son, they're going to be there for multiple months, and those costs are things that we would pay for. And while the parents are paying those bills that we're talking about, Ron, probably mom and sometimes mom and dad aren't able to work, and so their income's being reduced at the same time that their expenses have sharply increased.
You know, whether it's a young child or a teenager or a senior, what have you found with insurance companies? How much they'll cover, how much they'll work with you?
You know, that varies based on the insurance carrier. I have some insurance companies that I know if we appeal a denial, it's a long process. I have other insurance companies that we work with that I know that they generally are reasonable is probably the right word, but they'll work with us. And in many cases, we're able to negotiate something because they want the child, because from a cost standpoint, it's better to have a healthy child than an unhealthy one. They want to do what's best for the family, but sometimes trying to work out the details to get to that point takes a little more time.
If it's a senior involved, do you think the insurance companies will balk at that, saying, well, the person's, you know, 80 years old and we're not going to cover that?
You know, it's funny that you'd say that because I had an uncle who was going through dialysis treatments and was hoping to get a kidney transplant. And he reached the stage where the insurance carrier said, we're not going to pay for this. And I don't have the form in front of me, but essentially what they were saying was, from a medical necessity standpoint, this probably won't prolong your life. And they made that decision, which was horrible for my aunt and uncle to hear. And it was something that I don't think caused his death, but he passed away shortly after that. But he was not formally listed for a transplant because the insurance company said this is just not an expense that we feel is going to pay off. And in my mind, paying off is keeping my uncle alive and not a cost.
So the only alternative in that situation is if the family was able to raise funds
Yes.
to do it themselves, basically.
Yep. And a kidney transplant in that case, as an example, is about $150,000 expense.
Well, When you look at it, $150,000 to save a life is really not a lot of money when you put it in perspective.
You're right. You're right. And
So,
our hope, Ron, is that for those families that do get news like that, that is not going to be helpful for them to move forward, that's where we can come into play. But also for those families that do get the good news that insurance is covering, there's still a lot of expenses that we can help with.
now, is Medicaid available for some of these folks too?
It is. Most of our pediatric cases, the patients that are Medicaid eligible, we don't have a problem with that. Some patients have a diagnosis that they qualify both for Medicaid and Medicare, and that's a governmental program issue. It's not anything we can do, but that is definitely something that can help. Usually our families, and probably 75% of our families, have private pay insurance plans. So we're helping them with those, again, co-payments and deductibles, and hopefully insurance will pick up the vast majority of their costs.
Rick, do you want to share with the folks some of the transplants from folks in the area here that have had the transplants that you've worked with?
Absolutely. One of our patients is a young man by the name of Levi Olson from Marengo. Levi had his transplant when he was 3. He's now 4 and a half, and I saw on the website that we provide all of our families that his mom posted that he recently had a clinic visit, and he is doing really well, and it's exciting to see those updates. I
Well,
have
Rick,
to
before
say,
you go on to another person,
sure.
that individual, that young man, he then needs another heart transplant when he's what, age of 30? Is that correct?
You know, a lot of our heart patients do need a second heart transplant. All of our kidney patients will require a second transplant. Typically, a kidney, as an example, has, and forgive me for being this callous, but a shelf life of 10 to 20 years. Our patient in Phoenix that I referenced earlier, he's had the same liver for 31 years. He knows that he probably will need another liver transplant at some point in his life. But it's highly likely that Levi will need an additional heart transplant at some point down the road.
Okay, and how about the other folks?
Well, we've got a number of other kids in the area. One of them is Ariana Gillespie. She has received a liver transplant, and she's from Woodstock. Then we have another liver kid, Savannah Roble from Arlington Heights. And then we have another little boy who is waiting for both a kidney and a liver. His name is Jackson Dill. He's from Oswego. But in the state of Illinois, we have more than 100 patients that we work with, and we get new patients from Lurie Children's Hospital every month. And so we have a lot of families that, if your listeners want to say, I'd like to help someone that doesn't live too far from me or maybe my county, they can go on our website and do that search and find someone like those 4 kids and help them.
And how old is that young man from Oswego?
I'm going to say, Jackson, I think he's in early elementary school, but I can't remember exact age.
In your experience, do you find there's more transplants with the younger children than the middle-aged or older folks?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, Ron, one of the things that we get statistics from an organization called UNOS, the United Network for Organ Sharing, by far and away, there are more adult transplants. About 75 to 80% of all transplants are for adults. And it actually is more difficult to get a pediatric patient transplanted just because there aren't as many donors. For you and I as adults, if we needed, let's say, a kidney transplant, it would be easy for us to take a kidney from any donor. And for a child who, like Levi, is very young, it's not just the health of the organ, but it's the size of the organ. Trying to fit a heart that's the size of yours and mine into his tiny body as a 3-year-old would not have worked. And so that's the challenge. And unfortunately, that disadvantages some of our cases of kids that are younger. Teenagers, it's not as much of a problem. And obviously, as they get into their 20 and they're full size adults, that physical size doesn't matter. But for our younger kids, it really is much more of a challenge.
I'm going to give you kind of off the wall question over here, Rick. Do you see down the road any type of transplants where they will be artificial, that you won't have to depend on a donor, or it's going to help all these folks who are in need?
I do. I've been in this field, Ron, for 25 years, and I have seen just incredible things happen. my own family, I had a cousin who had leukemia and had a bone marrow transplant in 1976. At that stage, the survival rate, a 5-year survival rate for patients with his diagnosis was 3 years and 3%. So it was unlikely that he would last that 5-year period. Today, it's flip-flopped. It's a 97% survival rate for 5 years for a patient that had that same type of leukemia as Billy did. The same thing is going on the solid organ side, and I don't think it will be too much longer. We'll find that they'll be able to grow in the lab a kidney or a liver. I think a heart or a lung is going to take a little more time because those are more complex organs, but I do think that that's on the horizon. And whether or not that happens during our lifetime, Ron, I'm not confident, but I'm confident that in maybe the next 30 years, we're going to be talking about not pulling one off the shelf, but being able to devise one and manufacture it, or perhaps grow one in a lab. I've heard lots of things about 3D printing that, believe it or not, they can do some things with human tissue. We're not quite there yet, but I believe that's where we're headed.
Do you think they would take some DNA samples from the individual so that when they do grow this lab organ, that is now compatible with the person?
Yes. In fact, we have had some families that their children had needed bone marrow transplants, and what they did when their child was born was they banked the cord blood from the birth, and some of those patients are able to use cord blood from other families, and that will provide for a bone marrow type transplant. That was probably 25 years ago, just science that people talked about but couldn't believe it would be possible. And today it is possible, and many children are their lives are saved as a result of that. So I think as a country, we could have a much longer discussion, Ron, on insurance and what insurance pays for, but I think from a medical science standpoint, I think that's not too far down the road.
That's very encouraging for a lot of folks out there that are thinking about that, or maybe have a friend or relative that could be very close to needing that transplant, that there could be something out there. I know they work with heart transplants for a very long time, artificial hearts, and some have worked, some haven't, but I think each time they do that, they learn from their experience and learn how to make it better.
They do. And in fact, Ron, you probably read this article. In 2023, there was a gentleman that had a pig's heart, and that gentleman knew that it, the only chance of survival was to try something different. And so that kept him alive for an additional 8 or 9 weeks. Unfortunately, he passed away, but it gave him an extra 8 or 9 weeks that he might not have otherwise had. I think we're probably going to move toward that. That's called xenotransplantation. That is still another frontier, but much like manufacturing organs, I think it's another alternative for us to look at.
Well, with the animal organs, they feel that the pig is the best match of all the animals, Rick.
They do, and there's obviously anytime you introduce something that's foreign into our bodies, our bodies try to fight it. And so that's why our patients are on anti-immunosuppressant drugs. It's to keep the rejection. And with an animal organ, it's the exact same thing. And so it's going to take a little bit of time to try to figure out how to do that. There are some diseases that are animal born that aren't human, and our bodies don't recognize them, and it just will continue to fight it. So that's part of the trouble is trying to figure out not only is it compatible, but is it possible to keep our drug, our bodies, and trick our bodies to not try to reject that organ?
And I'm sure through science they found that the pig organs are better than, let's say, sheep.
Yep, that's exactly right. And that's why they focused on pigs. You may remember 25 or 30 years ago, there was a similar push to try to get cow organs and a cow heart. That has worked for valve replacement, but it has not worked for the entire heart and has not worked for other organs. So I think, again, medical science will get there, but we're just still taking one step at a time. But right now, it seems to be pigs are the focus of
Well, don't they use
xenotransplantation.
the for the pigs, some of the other parts of the pig for the human or replacement parts?
They do. And that's something that we don't do a whole lot with. But there are a lot of other types of transplants, whether it's a full transplant like a an organ, or we've had a lot of patients that have had tissue transplants, there are skin transplants. There are a lot of other things that medical science is working on. It just, we're kind of on the cutting edge of that, but not quite to the point where we can say this is direction that we all want to go in.
Well, when that finally happens, it's going to be really something for everyone to really, kind of look around and say, wow, this is really fantastic.
It is. It is. And I think, Ron, that's a conversation that we've not had before. But if you remember back when George Bush was president and there was a strong push for human embryo transplant and research, I think people are coming around to what that was and what it wasn't. And I think sometimes people had some misconceptions there. There's just an incredible amount of medical science that's going on right now where they're taking that those cells and they're able to regenerate things. So for instance, you can take cells from our hand and regenerate skin. So if someone that's a burn victim, for example, they're able to take their own skin and manufacture new skin for them. I think we're going to use that same type of technology and same information to be able to do the same thing with organs.
That's great, Rick. I want to just remind everybody that we're talking to Rick Loughran, the President and CEO of COTA. And we want to thank Rick for joining us today. You're listening to a 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio station. Go to huntleycommunityradio.com and contact us, and you can listen to this show under Around Town. Rick, thank you for joining us. We hope you have a great day, and good luck with all your transplants in the future.
Thank you, Ron. I hope you do as well.
Thank you so much. Take care.